Hello, my name is Stephen Benham from Melbourne, Australia. We're listening to Type Radio. Now we're talking.
Type Radio.
Just my type.
Hello, you're listening to Type Radio. My name is Donald.
I'm Lisa.
We're at the Type Shed 11 conference in Wellington, New Zealand. It's Black Friday, February 13th, and our guest is Stephen Benham. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Lisa, the first question.
Do you have sex often?
I was hoping you weren't going to say that.
No, okay. We'll go back to the original. Are you religious?
I'm not religious, no. But I do have a faith. You know, I think everybody has a faith in something. Well, you'd sort of hope so. So yeah, I have a faith in humanity, I think. Yeah, that's a fairly serious answer to that question. But yeah. Cool.
For the record, yes. Do you have rituals?
Yes, I do. I'm sort of hyper organized. That's just the personality kind of type that I am. So as a result, there is a sort of ritual. I'm one of those few people that can actually leap out of bed in the morning. Like, I have this weird kind of zealot aspect to my personality, which means that I really embrace the day, and so that's part of a ritual. And yeah, I think I tend to be very habitual in the way that I do things, and then I have to stop and I have to reconfigure that every now and then, because then I just begin to feel like I'm living sort of Groundhog Day sort of scenarios. So yeah, I think that's the price of being organized. Yeah, many rituals.
Can you cook?
Yes, I can. Yes, and I enjoy it immensely.
Yes. Can you give us a recipe?
Ooh, because I live in Australia and because it's so hot, like it was 46 degrees last weekend, we do a lot of salads, of course, because, we have a lot of fresh produce and it's so bloody hot that you can't actually cook anything. You don't dare turn on the oven or the stove. So we just put together a lot of salads. So that's kind of the art of our cooking, is something that's cold but, quite flavoursome and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Well, what kind of salad would that be?
Oh, we put together some rocket salad with some shaved parmesan and a little bit of balsamic olive oil, or maybe some beans or some dry noodles in there, stuff like that. And it's a really good, healthy, light meal. It's totally different to the European heavy kind of stuff. Yeah.
Well, coming from Australia, what do you think are the differences between Australian and New Zealand design?
Yeah, well, I guess they're a bit more subtle, really, because we come obviously from the same region. I sort of think of New Zealand as, now I'm sure they're going to hate me saying this, but they're striving for some sort of cultural identity in the same way that Australia was probably maybe 15, 20 years ago. And I feel like Australia has actually broken through. I feel that everybody does take Australian culture quite seriously, and Australian design has been recognised, I think. Whereas I can assure you that when I started my career 20 years ago, I'd be going along to a conference and I'd have the little badge and it would say Stephen Benham, AUS, for Australia, and everybody would talk to me in German, thinking I'm from Austria. So no, the whole idea of an Australian designer even being there was absurd. So. To head back to your question, New Zealand is sort of going through that process, and events like this are exactly the kind of thing that tends to get you on the map and tends to be able to define what kind of culture you come from. I think it's really good, and Australia and New Zealand are at really fortunate positions because their identity is sort of in this amorphous formulative sort of thing, whereas I think, say, German and Dutch culture, there's such a weight of heritage and so on. To me, it's such a sort of almost a millstone, or a burden at times for some European design. So I think it's a fantastic time for Australian and New Zealand design.
But what is you say that Australia has broken through? But what is that? What are the characteristics?
Well, I guess. A certain informality, even maybe a humour, a playfulness. I wouldn't say a lightness, because I think that maybe makes it a little too trivial, but I would certainly say a certain happiness, a certain optimism. I think that's what Australia is. It's bright and it's happy. I mean, it's not stupid. It's not like airheaded or anything. But it has potential. It has a freshness about it. I find that every time I come back to Australia from being, say, in Europe or something, I just feel like everything's kind of lifted. You know, all of a sudden you're in a totally different Pantone chart. All of a sudden, all the colours just kind of rise to much brighter levels. You know?
Is that also because of the climate?
It is, exactly. It's part of the climate, but I think climate informs character, you know, personal character. You can see that in an English winter in the tube, you know. It's just absolute bloody melancholy. It's everybody's so angry and pissed off with the darkness and the heaviness of the weather, and so it exudes through people's personality. And I think that happens with Australia and New Zealand as well. So, yeah.
What sparked your interest in type design?
Well, I was trained to be an advertising art director. And this was in the 80s when advertising was, you know, really big, big sort of thing. And I was really enthusiastic about working in an advertising agency. I would research all the advertising agencies. I'd know who's got this account and blah, 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 blah. And then I spent one afternoon in an advertising agency after I graduated, and I just looked around in this sea of kind of ponytailed flex suit wankers, and I just thought, I cannot work in this field. It'll kill me, absolutely kill me, because it was just about plagiarism, it was about brown nosing, it was about all the things that I despise from an ethical point of view. And I thought, no, I'm just going to die here. So I then went and worked in a newspaper office producing tiny little advertisements. This is pre-Mac, so we had to do all the paste up and stuff. I worked in there for 9 months. In the meantime, I was researching what was going on in the graphic design world beyond Australia, which was a lot harder in those days because of the technology. And I learned about this person called Eric Spiekerman. And
who's that? No.
And so then I saved up my money and I bought a ticket to Berlin. And I lived in Berlin for 3 months. And for those 3 months, I would just simply sit at the kitchen table in my little flat in right near Potsdamer Platz, right near the Berlin Wall. And I used to sit and I used to hand kern type for 3 months just with a pair of scissors and photocopies. I mean, there was nothing kind of, you know, high tech about it, but I just had to, it was almost a sort of monastic thing I had to do. I had to kind of just relearn all this sort of thing about spatial relationships and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, and I did contact Eric. I contacted 10 graphic designers in Berlin and only one got back to me, Eric Spiekerman. And I was really, really pleased, and so I went and saw him. And that, in those days, Meta Design was a very small concern, only a few employees and a little shop front and so on. And after seeing what he had done with that studio, I was terribly inspired by that. And so I guess I put my sort of monastic skills with that sort of inspiration from Meta Design, came back to Australia and started up a studio that had a very strong typographic focus. And I've been running that studio since 1991, so it's coming up to 18 years. So that's what sparked my interest in typography. Yeah. But I think prior to that, I'd always had an interest in language. And I think if you have an interest in language, then it's just the next step to then be interested in that manifestation in a typography.
Yes, you write?
Yes, I do write.
You also do a lot of publications as
yes,
well?
Yes.
What created that need? Like, was the writing first, or was the type design first?
Well, type design is only a side issue to what we do. It's just sort of to keep our hand in and just to sort of have an awareness of what's going on in that field. But certainly writing was very, very important. I think it would be great if more typographers and more type designers did write. I just can't help but think that that's an essential relationship, that you can't just love the form of the word, you have to love the content of the word, and you have to be able to fashion the content.
Yeah, but you
of the
also
word.
Don't say to a writer that I think you should be a type designer.
That's right.
I mean,
yes,
yeah, that's
no,
not.
No, that's right. But I think there's an Ann Burdick quote, which is something like, we don't, as designers, we don't write to become better writers, we write to become better designers rather than writers. Yeah. Mm. So sort of an interesting way of looking at things. I mean, I think maybe it's best that some graphic designers don't actually write. Maybe they write crap. I don't know. But it's always interested me. And so as a result, so I've written 14 books on all about type, But it's not looking at type from a technical point of view, because there's so many other people who could write that much, much better than I can. I'm looking at type from a cultural and social point of view. That's what really interests me, you know, where type interfaces with people. That's kind of the thing that really interests me.
But you also then have also a sense of responsibility, I mean, in a way, for your country. I mean, if you you produce so many magazines and writing, and there's a, yeah, what we were reading, you were named a sort of typographic evangelist.
Evangelist, that's a Rick Pointer thing.
Yeah. And we were wondering, is that because of where you're situated, because of
I think that's right. I think somebody has to you know, fly the flag, if you want to call it that. Plus, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a journalist, I wanted to be a policeman, I wanted to be an artist, and I wanted to be a priest, right? And I've put them all into the one job, which is that I write, so I'm sort of the journalist. I'm the policeman because I'm a control freak. Most graphic designers are. I'm a priest. I'm a priest because I can, and to a certain extent, I can sort of preach the beauty of type to other people.
And you evangelize in a way.
I evangelize, yeah. But obviously not in a sort of over-the-top way. But you can't help, I mean, when you come from a country like Australia, or for that matter, New Zealand, when you start doing things, you can't help but be sort of ambassadorial, because who else is there to do it? So it's sort of an automatic position that you find yourself in.
But you're not on your own, right? I mean, there are also a lot of...
Yeah, absolutely. But back in the early 1990s when I started, you felt like you were very much on your own. Yeah, but things have changed, and that's the great thing.
But it's also like in conjunction with the fact that there were forms, there was something like a typeface that was not known at all. It's only come since that era, that since a period, then people had, like, the general public has become aware of, like, there is, like, in your computer program, there is something like which you can sort of choose the typeface.
Yes, that's right. It's totally changed. And I think, I can't help but think that's really helped the general community engage with typography. I mean, this is a theme that's come up all day, through the talks today. It's not just enough to talk about typography. You've got to talk about type in a social context, or how other people interpret type. It's very important. Mm. Mm.
If you had to choose choose between writing or designing, you had to, like,
if I had
today.
To.
Oh. You will have to make a choice.
You're forcing me to.
Yeah,
so it's not really
forced.
A choice.
No, there's no choice. It's just one.
Yes. Gee, that's...
And which one do you think you're stronger in? Are you better a writer or a better designer?
Yeah, that's a really hard question, because it oscillates. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm a much better writer than a designer and so on. Yeah, I like them both. I really do. That's a really hard. That's a really hard question.
You're not going to leave till you make that decision.
Sorry, Steve.
I would probably say I'd prefer to design, because at least maybe in the design process I might be able to rewrite the text. So, you know, which I find myself often doing. You know, in design jobs, very often I'll just, you know, go through some text and correct it or whatever, because some clients can't write, wouldn't be able to write a shopping list.
I was just listening, because the noise is so all
heavy
around.
Winds, very heavy winds. Yeah. You've picked them one of the windiest places in the world.
Is it true?
Mm. Windy Wellington, that's what it's known as.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Chicago. Anyway.
Oh, it could, I'm sure there's other places in the world, but...
That's one of your publications was called QWERTY.
Oh, God, yes.
And there has also been a Dutch, you know that,
right.
You know that.
Oh,
okay.
Believe me, I know that. I was in contact with Hardwerken, in those days, and when Rick Pointer wrote this article about Hardwerken in a very early issue of I, like it was like probably one of the first issues, I saw this thing that said QWERTY, and I was like, oh my God, they're doing QWERTY, I'm doing QWERTY, isn't that kind of strange? And so I contacted them, and they were really happy about us sharing this name, you know, from one side of the earth to the other, we just came up with the same idea any sort of co-influence. Yeah. And they actually sent me all these copies of their QWERTY, and I sent Then, so it's kind of a nice little cultural exchange. Yeah.
Because I was like, I was interviewed for the second issue of that magazine.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. Piet Schreuders. I was just out of art school, and I was like, I was so surprised.
Yeah.
To be and have this like very glossy big magazine.
Yeah.
Sponsored by Eduard Bos, you know that the typesetting company. And I was like, I was so honored. I had like a 4 or 5 pages in that. Mm. I was like, wow.
Yeah, no, so it was really, very good. I don't know what's happened to.
I think only like 6 or 7. Issues were made.
Yes.
And then they stopped it.
Because it was bought out by another company.
Yeah.
This thing called Inzero.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway. That's an aside.
Are you competitive?
Yes, I think anybody in our field, whether they state it or not, whether they admit it or not, I think you have to be competitive to a certain extent.
But even though, for example, if you come out with a publication about design, then you have to sort of. If you're also competitive, how do you choose the people
to feature? Yes. I think we're all competitive in nature, but I think sometimes we have to exercise a humility. You know, sometimes we have to stand.
Or
back.
Do you ever say, "Oh, has there been an incident that you said, oh, no, I'm not going to include him because, no.
No, I wouldn't dare state that on radio for a start. But, I actually think humility, interestingly enough, is a subject that's come up. That's one of the greatest things about working with type and working in graphic design is that there's this beautiful thing about being able to step back a little bit and actually having the content be the star, having the images be the star, and you sort of orchestrate the context of those things. So there's a certain humility involved with saying, hey, this is not just about me, this is about this other thing. I think that's a really wonderful thing to do.
Yeah, although I think the type designers have more humility than designers themselves.
Oh, yes. I would say type designers definitely do. And with type design, of course, on top of that, you've got this thing of you've got a total lack of control over what people do with your creation. You know, it's like having a child and you want the child to become a corporate banker and he ends up being a junkie, you know, and that's that kind of real disappointment in that.
Isn't that also the reason that you're like doing your own publication? So
yes,
at least like
is.
In that aspect you'll have like
yes,
control
autonomy.
Over
yes,
it.
Yes, absolutely.
And you're a control freak. So
yes, yeah. Well, I'm sure everybody in this entire shed is. I think that's just an inherent thing. I still haven't met a graphic designer who is not into control. It's just that's a personality type.
Is it also true in that it is also that there's more well-known male designers and
unfortunately there is that imbalance which seems to be replicated everywhere around the world it seems that there seems to be this weird thing where when you go along to design school you know probably more than half you know sometimes even up to 75% of people in that classroom are female you then ask those same people 10 years what's going on and all the awards and the accolades and the speaking tours and everything it's almost all men and I for one, I can't explain it, but I certainly see it. I see it a lot. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. But
so what is next? I mean, you have you're so active. You say for the last 18 years.
Yeah.
What do you see something that you would do something else, something different?
Yes. Where? Oh, something totally different.
Or different, or not a publication, or not. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, we've tried a few different things over the past few years. Like in 2005, we actually opened up a series of forums for the general community about type. And so we talked about type, but from a really sort of everyman's kind of level. And that was quite successful. We had about maybe 450 to 500, you know, audience members there, just talking about type. Which
do
is
you also
cookie.
Manage to attract people that are not involved in design?
Yes, that was the primary sort of aim of that event was to try to speak to all different types of people from all different sort of professions. So that's been really successful, and we've been able to do that by organising typography film festivals. And all that kind of stuff. So we're trying to use the media that is very friendly to people rather than, you know, being more of an academic, you know, format.
Do you think there are too many fawns, which is like a little bit of putting it black and white, but...
No, I don't, because... Well, the first question I ask myself, as I'm sure every type designer does, is, you know, when just before you're about to design a font, you say, you know, why should this font exist? And I think that's a really valid question. In the same way that I think, say, if you're thinking about having a child, and if you really ask yourself, you know, is this child, you know, really necessary? Is this child going to add anything to anybody's life or whatever? If the answer is no, then you shouldn't have the child. In the same way that if the answer is no with typeface design, if it has no purpose, if there's a typeface exactly like it out there, then it's a totally academic, totally fruitless exercise, and I would never do that. So I think the beauty of type, of course, as we know, is that there's always these tiny, tiny little spaces in between existing typefaces.
Yeah, but you might say, is there, you know... you might ask that question, but you have no control of the outcome. Maybe you think, yes, it's necessary for this direction, and suddenly it becomes popular.
Yes.
You can't control it.
That's right. But very, very often we will actually design typefaces out of a situation where we'll look for a particular typeface for a job or a project. And if one does not exist, then we'll design one for it. So it's a bit like the tradesman, you know, building a tool because, you know, he's found a little thing that just won't fit any of the other tools. So that you make the tool to fit. So that's, I mean, it's an old-fashioned idea, but I think it's a good one.
What do you think about Dutch design?
I heard you asking the last interviewee that.
we're doing a survey.
Did you expect me to say, hey, you look really good for a tie?
Wow, Dutch design. Well, yeah, I mean, it's extremely strong. It has a very heavy profile, you know, very strong profile. But I would say that it being a European country, obviously it's got that heaviness, it's got that heritage, that does weigh heavy. It's the history, I think. Yeah, definitely. And I suppose I'm saying that probably because my perspective is from one of the newer countries, you know, the younger countries, if you want to say. To me, there's a certain heaviness, but there is a beauty, a complexity, and a certain depth to Dutch design that I don't think we have in Australia or New Zealand, and that's fine because the places are different. So
okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, pleasure.
Stay tuned at www.typeradio.org.